One of the most interesting artists we met at the Austin International Drag Festival is Lady J. Martinez, a drag queen who studies why folks have been dressing up in drag for centuries.
She recently got her doctorate, so that's Dr. Lady J to you. Today, drag queen historian Dr. Lady J. Martinez joins us to take a look at the controversial crowning on RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars 3. And she gives us a peek at the forced feminization and transploitation films She-Man and Queens of Heart.
Plus, there's a new website that'll show you who blocked you on Grindr.
Katya, I'm not saying her last name, Chukova, says she's back.
An in-depth analysis of Trixie Mattel's doll-like makeup.
And was Mae West a crossdresser?
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Unlock a delicious world of podcasting magic and listen to thousands of amazing shows at feastoffun.com/plus.
Excuse me while I adjust my breasts.
Hello, look at your honey.
I'm trying.
You look fabulous.
I love it when we have beautiful women in the studio.
Thank you.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
It's not so often we have these lovely, lovely ladies.
Thank you. Lady J. Martinez, but known on Facebook as Jeremiah. Lady J. Martinez of Deal Davenport. O'Neill Davenport.
The easiest thing is everybody can find me on Facebook, Instagram, my website. It's all The Only Lady J.
Oh.
So anything you want, theonlyladyj.com.
So we call you Lady J for short.
Yeah, you can just call me Lady J. I mean, most people, really, like, I'm more like Lady J PhD at this point, more than I am Martinez or O'Neill or anything like that.
Dr. Lady J.
We're simulcasting this, okay. So if you guys want to hold up your drink to show them what we're drinking.
Yes,
I'm almost... Clink. So this is a piña colada that we're going to be making on Cooking with Drag Queens with... We're testing it out on Lady J. Martinez, but with two other drag queens.
And the lab is working well.
Right, because, you know, piña colada, is it the official drink of Puerto Rico?
I think it probably is.
And you're
I'll say it right now. Thank it is. You. And the official drink of Puerto Rico.
And your drag mom is Puerto Rican.
That's correct. Erica Martinez, 47-time title holder, five-time national title holder.
Wow.
Now, get that microphone nice and close to you, honey.
So there we go.
They can hear you.
I'm used to people at my bar when I'm on the mic being like, can you move that mic the fuck away from your mouth? Because you're killing everyone's ears. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
It's super important. You got to pay attention to that kind of stuff. I'm dying for your look tonight. I think it's hysterical. Tell us what you're wearing.
Oh, thank you. I have on this sort of Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Farts Club band, wizard sleeve, poofball, clown fantasy with a naked swimsuit sort of poofball neon outfit.
Mm-hmm. It looks good. And tell me about your eyes, because your eyes are just, they're so impressive.
So they are full clown.
Yeah.
Clowning runs in my family.
Oh, really?
My real family. Yeah, my uncle Ray was a clown in the Shriners Circus.
Oh, and his name was Dr. really good work, those Shriners.
Right? And his name was Dr. Goodhart.
I went to the Shriners Hospital when I was a kid. They gave me a little x-ray.
Oh, that's
good. They thought maybe I had scoliosis. I do have slight scoliosis, but they said it was okay. But they noted that, like, when they took the x-ray, they're like, we can tell, like, you were smiling during, because they do a full body x-ray, and they could tell that I was smiling.
That's so cute. Ray was a clown in the Shriners Circus, and his name was Dr. Goodhart, and he drove a little like car, and he wore a little doctor's outfit, and now this is the first time I realized, oh, now I'm a doctor clown. He was a doctor clown. That's weird.
Oh my god,
I literally didn't put that together until this moment. That's very strange.
Lady J. Martinez is probably one of the nation's foremost academic drag historians.
Thank you.
And that means that you've studied extensively the world and why drag queens exist today, and maybe as a way to explain to the world why you are dressed so colorfully. You look like a Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band member.
Thank you.
But in a very, you know, Bozo the Clown.
Yes.
Barbarella so, from space kind of look.
Yes. So my inspirations were like when I was coming up, this was like before, you know, the internet was useful. It existed, but it was like, you know, porn and I don't know what, a bunch of Geocities websites.
It's pronounced Geocities. It's pronounced memes, not Mimi.
I thought you were going to say it's pronounced pornography.
Oh, Geocities, because that was the early days of the internet where you could get porn.
Yes.
For free.
Yes.
You didn't have to pay for it.
And you could build your own website.
And it was all pictures, and they took 3 hours to load. And you'd be sitting there like, well, I guess I'll hope nobody finds this computer before this picture loads.
Oh, and it would go
back and forth. Oh, my God, it was the worst.
But you know, when guys would send you, like, photos and whatnot, because you go back and forth, it was like the anticipation. You're like,
oh my God,
load it up. I'll load it up. Okay, we're fine. Like, here's his chest. All right, now it's coming down his belly button. How long before we get the dick? How long before the
oh
dick?
My God.
You're like,
you're like taking
up
me back to the moments of that early porn experience. Mm-hmm. Of like, it's coming. He's coming.
And that's not anticipation is part of the thrill.
Yes.
You know?
It's what you don't show is as important as what you do show.
It's true.
So what made you want to be a drag queen in a world? Because you were been dressing up in drag way before RuPaul's Drag Race was on the air.
Well, I've been dressing up in drag since I was 2 years old.
Okay.
So I started off wearing long t-shirts and my grandma's red high heels at 2 years old.
Sexy.
Then when I was five.
Sexy baby.
Thank you. I try. Sexy Tennessee baby.
This is being simulcast on Facebook.
Wait.
On our Facebook.com/Feast of Fun. Show them your Barat look. It is really quite gorgeous. Yeah, look at that, honey. Show them the pie. Oh, yeah, honey.
Now make love to the mannequin.
Yes. Oh, yes. Hump the mannequin, honey. Oh, yes.
Yes. We are having some lesbian loving here right now. Ooh, she has nipples. She has real nipples.
Show the audience.
Pull
that out. Pull that out.
She's very excited about it.
She's totally aroused.
Yeah, she's getting all excited there. Okay, so what made you want to dress up as a drag queen? Like, what is the inspiration about all this?
So, when
there's a great story here.
There's a few things. One is my mother, of course, like many queens, because when I was a kid, my dad was very abusive to my mother. I saw a lot of that. And then I saw how my mother was, like, without a college education, in a teeny tiny itty bitty backwoods town, built one business for herself, then sold that business, built another one, then had two businesses, and one of them was a bridal wear and pageant wear store. So,
you are born into it.
I was literally born into this
born
glamorousness.
Into glamorous.
And,
for people who don't know that, it's basically dresses, stores that focus on pageant dresses.
Yeah.
And most of them are white, right?
And this is like back in the day. So this was like my mom put it the other day. She said, you know, it was the JonBenet Ramsey days. Mm. She was like, everybody in the country, like who was it? Like when I say country, I mean like in the country, everybody was doing pageants. All these little girls.
This is in Detroit or?
So what? This was in Tennessee.
Tennessee.
And
okay.
I tell people I'm from Knoxville, but where I'm originally from is Harriman, Tennessee / Midtown / Kingston, which we generally all refer to as Roane County. It's a little cold town kind of area out in the middle of bumblefuck nowhere.
How close is that to the Ferry Commune in Liberty?
It's about, I haven't been, but I think Short Mountain is about 2 hours, 2.5 hours from Roane County in Knoxville.
So that's a part of the world where people pretty much let you do whatever you want to do. And so there's really right-wingers and very left-wingers.
Yes.
And it's all kinds of people doing their own projects and communes. And
it's one of those things that's different from other parts of the South. It's something that I've talked with my family and also with people that I connect with. And I'm like, wait, so you have an accent. Are you from? And then they're like, yep, the mountains. And I'm like, okay, it's a mountain people thing. Because mountain people are very much like, you do what you want to do. I do what I want to do. You don't cross my property line. And I won't fuck with you, and you won't fuck with me. And it's very much like there's a lot of that.
Yeah. And I'll blow you at the truck stop.
Yes, and I'll blow you at the truck stop, but I don't want to see you on Monday when I'm hanging out with my wife. Like, there's a lot of that, right? So that's kind of where I started. And so the second time that I did drag, hypothetically, was I was like 5 years old. We were too poor. My school did a pageant, where it was toys from a toy box. And my mom was like, we don't have the money for this costume. So you're putting on my blazer, and here's a curly blonde wig, and here's a horn. You're Harpo Marx. So I walked around silently, you know, honking this horn, being Harpo Marx. But that's like the first time I put on a wig. So I think there was a little part of me that was like, oh, we'll come back to this. Let's put a bookmark right here, and we'll just this come back good. To this. This
a
feels
wig,
very
a
good.
It's transformative.
It is.
It's absolutely transformative.
Are you high a little bit now? Because not high on drugs, but high on drag.
Oh, always.
Yeah,
I'm always like jazzed about drag.
You're jazzed. I can see. I can feel the energy. I don't know if the audience guys who are watching this on Facebook
I'm
kind Live. Of
like I'm watching it on Facebook. I have to close this off because I'm watching it on Facebook Live. Where I'm just like you're right here, but I'm like she looks so pretty on the TV.
Listen,
John Fitzgerald says, God bless you, honey.
You want to know where it comes from? I'm a manic bipolar, honey. Yeah. So my body, my brain naturally produces chemistry that is very similar to cocaine, which is very weird. It's so funny because so many people.
Wait a second. Your body makes cocaine on its own?
So people who have mania.
I'm going to start snorting you.
Mania is sort of like the inverse of depression.
Okay.
So
it's
you,
a real
when
high.
It, yeah. So when it's good, you have a constant feeling of euphoria. You have all this energy. You can sleep for like 3 hours and you feel fine. Like right before I went nuts the first time that I really lost my mind, I'd been awake for 6 days straight and slept 1 hour. Like, and then I went insane right after I gave like the most amazing talk I ever gave at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
What was the talk about at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
It was about my work about drag, and it was about the pop culture that led me to become the person I was. So I called it the VH1 Made Me Gay speech. So it was about like all these diva marathons and all of these things that were so very gay but weren't about gay men on television when I was coming of age, and about how that and Priscilla Queen of the Desert and Tu Wong Fu and all of these things led me to study drag.
Yeah, someone wants to know about your makeup, and can you post a video of you beating your face? You said you're inspired by Trixie Mattel, but you feel like her makeup is more static, and you wanted one that's more expressive like a puppet.
Yeah, so
what makes Trixie's makeup static, and what makes this
so Trixie's eye cut crease where it's cut in relation to her eyelid is more like a doll. Like if you look at high-end Barbie dolls or high-end fashion dolls that are like Barbie but way more expensive, which my best friend who lives with me is a doll collector and has his own business where he makes doll clothes for Monster High dolls, haunt couture. Her makeup reminds me of those high-end dolls because it's inexpressive. It's beautiful, but it doesn't move when she is performing or talking. And so what I've been looking for my whole drag career is how do I make my eye more and more and more and more expressive? How do I make it so that it's like I'm almost wearing like a mask that moves with my face? And so that's kind of where I started. And then the neon colors were just, I've been obsessed with neon forever. I love black lights. I love like that whole 60s, 70s psychedelic kind of visuals culture. And so what I wanted was, I kept looking for makeup that was black light sensitive, and everything I'd find wasn't what I wanted. And I finally found these powders, and then of course they discontinued them. So I've been buying them as many as I can on eBay before they're gone.
Oh my God. Yeah. Now that you're talking on the podcast, everyone's going to rush and buy them all out. So
I'm obsessed.
They'll come up with something new.
It was, it's MYO. Mm-hmm. I've never used this makeup brand for anything else. I only came across them because I was just Googling and Amazon searching blacklight makeup and trying to find something that was blendable. Mm-hmm. Because everything that I found was like face paint.
Sure.
And I was like, I don't want fucking face paint. Like, I want something that I can create a blended kind of like airbrushed looking look. And that's what I love about this makeup is you can, and you can use it on your lips too. And I do a lot if I'm doing a black, full black light.
I think
I
have a black light down in the basement. We should pull it
out. We should definitely. You will not believe how much this stuff glows.
Neon is the theme of season 10, says John Fitzgerald. And he wants to know, you feel like it, they didn't use it to its full extent in the trailer.
Yeah, the promo, it's hard to tell because the promo goes by so quickly. But to me, what I noticed about the promo was I was like, there's so much neon. Why is it all yellow and green and like salmon-y orange? There was a lot of those three colors. And I'm like, you know, there's a whole rainbow of neons that are available. And like, there are lots of fabrics that are neon. And like, I'm not dissing any of those queens because a lot of them, I'm sure, were like, I'm sure they were not given a ton of notice, and a lot of them don't work with neon often. So just like if somebody told me, hey, we want you to wear a bunch of blue.
I'm sure they had a stylist do most of that stuff for
them. Oh, that's true,
right?
Too. That's true, too.
So you have some sharp words for that stylist.
Yeah.
Now, you also said that your makeup was kind of inspired by Peaches Christ.
Yeah, so listening to Peaches, I came across Peaches first through my best friend, Miss Hamblin, Christopher Hamblin, is Latrice's fiance.
And her gorgeous little twink.
Are they not married yet?
They're not married yet. They're getting
like,
close.
I gotta wait to see how this money works out.
They're getting close.
You gotta sign that prenup.
Girl, I'm like, when is this wedding coming, girl? I'm like, I got a plan for travel. Like, because I better be in the wedding party, Miss Hamblin. Anyway.
So you're close friends with Latrice's boyfriend.
Yeah. I mean, okay. I was best friends with Christopher for a long time before Latrice came in the picture.
Okay.
Christopher and I met in undergrad at University of Tennessee. We were both music majors. He was an organ major, I think. I know he was an organist, but I think he was an organ major. And I was
I'm sure he plays an organ of some kind, right?
But he plays Latrice's organ.
That's the truth. You know, I asked him the other day. He was not amused. I asked him the other day. I called him while I was drunk, and I said, listen, I need to know one thing, Christopher. Has there ever been a moment where you put your nuts really close to her face, and she said, get those nuts away from my face? He was not happy. He was not amused. I was like, surely someone has asked you this question before. He was like, nobody's been stupid enough to ask me.
I don't get it.
What?
Because Latrice, in her season, there was that moment in the...
Yeah,
the,
that was when they were police women. She was played a...
Hot in Tuckahoe, when they did the police woman, and then she did that...
She was a prison guard, and they had lesbian sex.
Was that her season,
or
she came back for a visit?
No, that was her season. That was her original season.
Okay.
And she did that bit where she was like, get those nuts away from my face! And so I was just... I don't remember what made me think of it, and then I was like, I have to call Miss Hamblin right now. Because he was so not amused.
So you introduced Latrice Sorrell to her boyfriend?
No.
Okay.
That happened. They met at what is the name of that club?
She's a drag historian, so she knows.
They met at this club in Knoxville that I cannot think of the name of right this second. But I remember hearing that night about how it went, and then hearing the whole process as this happened. And then like when he moved to Florida, I was like, okay, bitch, this is a real deal. Like I guess y'all are real serious. I didn't know it was going to be all like this, and now. It's crazy because now the only time I see him is like when I end up working with Latrice somehow. So I got to see Latrice.
You host shows in Cleveland.
Yeah. And I did the show. The last time I saw them before Austin was Latrice did a show at, it was her and Mimi and that whole tour that they do. I can't remember the name. Divas of Drag. They were doing the Divas of Drag tour, and a bunch of girls from Bounce, like four or five of us, were opening
That's your
the show.
Home club?
It was then. Bounce is closed now.
Okay.
My home bar is now Cocktails Cleveland.
Okay.
But
let's talk about the scene in Cleveland in a bit.
Yeah. So. I lost my train of thought.
Yeah, you're excited.
Latrice, Divas of Drag. You know, right. Okay, so yeah. Divas of Drag, they came in, and that was like the first time that I got to meet Latrice that I was like, I love meeting Latrice, but it was really nice because Austin this last time I got to meet Tim. And that's what I wanted to meet. I wanted to meet the person who's with my best friend.
So now, like, as a drag historian, do you like meet a drag queen and like go home and like write notes? Be like, this is what happened. This is the experience. So you're recording it.
I'm terrible about keeping a record of anything.
So what kind of drag historian are you then?
one who does a lot of writing down and making research. Timelines.
So it's more about research and stuff.
It's research, and so much of it is I'll find a piece of information, and then I think it's my own thoughts. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is my own analysis of things and coming up through the drag scene, sure, through Tennessee and Cleveland. I mean, that's one of the things, that's one of the reasons why I started writing about drag as an academic, was because all of the academic writing about drag was about gender theory. It was, sure, all about using drag as a tool to talk about gender. And I was like, y'all are a bunch of tools because you're not talking about drag. Like, you're talking about the concept of drag.
So you're talking about ideas? Feminine, like, what are some of those concepts you're talking about?
So like Judith Butler's work, where she talks about like drag, and she talks about drag in the same way that Rue used to talk about, mm-hmm, drag, where drag is about,
well,
who
got
you,
all her stuff from Judith Butler.
It's, well, you're not totally, right, wrong.
Yeah, okay. That's
those queens, yeah, yeah, in New York in the 90s were definitely reading the gender theory, mm-hmm, that was coming out. If you, because if you watch Wigstock and you listen to their conversations, you're like, oh, this
is
some people,
what they're referencing.
Yeah, there's some stuff that's being referenced.
So baby drag queens should all read Judith Butler.
No. Because that's the problem. Is Judith Butler is great if you want to talk about gender. But if you want to talk about drag, what amazed me was, how is everybody talking about drag when there's not a history? Y'all don't know what, like, y'all don't know the, mm-hmm, topic you're talking about because you literally don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. So you keep talking about drag as if it's this monolithic entity that exists in one place and space and time. And that drag is something any human being can put on. So it can do anything and be anything that a person can do. So like there are visual artists who are drag queens, there are musicians who are drag queens, there are performance artists who are drag queens, there are straight like club drag queens,
sure,
like, which is also why the history is still really hard to piece together, mm-hmm, because like some people have these little pieces of Andy Warhol, mm-hmm, history because they're art historians,
right,
and some people have, like I do, like,
and
these little pieces from punk and disco,
own, and I have my own theory about the origins of drag.
Yeah,
and like, what do you think about that?
Mark, why don't you tell
I'll
them
just do it
real
quick? So we did, yeah, a whole podcast on it. It's in the archives. You can figure it out. You know, drag came into the lexicon, in the
dictionaries
like in 1870.
Yeah,
and so that's the first mention of it, and so we kind of look like, where did this come from? And then I watched this movie and somebody mentioned something about a drag hunt. And I was like, what the fuck's a drag hunt? And so a drag hunt is where, you know, the aristocrats in the UK would take a little a scented piece of cloth and run it through the fields and wherever they wanted to go to simulate a fox hunt. So all the dogs would chase after that instead of going, because a real fox is going to go through the woods, it's going to go through the creeks, it's going to go to these places where, you know, the fat cats don't necessarily want to go. So they wanted something that was really nice and tailored to them. And so it was something, it was a put on. It was an artifice. It was a show. And then also too, when you look at like a drag race is something that you can
see with cars
from start to finish. You can view the whole thing all at once.
It's staged.
So
the term drag means staged. And so drag in its essence is,
right,
theater.
And so some people say like it comes from Romani, from like dragger or something like that, where like women's dresses drag along the floor. But I'm like, we never say a woman's dress drags along the floor. We say a woman's dress trails.
The key thing about drag here with this idea and this etymology, mm-hmm, is that drag means to create something that isn't there for the pleasure of the recreation. In a sense, you know, so drag is the sister of the soul sister of theater. Mm-hmm.
I think that's very true.
Yeah.
Regardless of the origins of the word, that is very true. My thing about the origins of the word, part of it, honestly, like if I'm honest about the where the word comes from, I don't give a shit. Like that's part of it. Is I just don't
care.
You're a
historian.
I care about the people and what they were doing. The language.
Sure.
The problem is I know enough about history to understand that queer culture as it existed in the 1800s, 1700s, etc., was so underground and not recorded and written, mm-hmm, down by people who had literacy, mm-hmm, the ability to write stuff down, free paper, etc. Like, part of what appeals to me about it, about that, about the fact that we don't know where the word comes from, is that that's kind of the beauty of drag, is everybody doesn't get all the information.
Mm.
And, I mean, it's not that I don't care at all. I mean, back up a second.
Sure.
It's not that I don't care at all.
You're comfortable with the ambiguity.
Yes, I think I'm totally okay with the fact that we don't know where it comes from.
Right. But we definitely know it didn't come from Shakespeare.
And we know it didn't come from that bullshit phrase, dressed as a girl. That acronym bullshit is 100% not true. Yeah, yeah. That is verifiably false.
Mm-hmm. A lot of old gay guys that really, like, they
yes. And I don't know why. I do not know why people are obsessed with that.
Shakespeare, people really respect Shakespeare and they want to think about drag.
People always want to equate drag with Shakespearean boys dressing up in drag. And I'm like, it was such a different situation. It was such a different reason.
Yeah.
Yes, queer people were doing it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's the same as people who are intentionally getting in a dress because that's what they want to do. Not because they want to play the female roles that happen to be what's offered to them.
And when you were an actor back in those days, I mean, it was really just so looked down upon.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you wouldn't want your child to go into acting.
Yeah, like, actors and sex workers were buried in the same nondescript funeral or nondescript cemeteries for a long time.
And so, you know, there's a lot of women out there that feel as though, like, that, you know, when you talk about Shakespeare's time, it was a very sexist and misogynist time for that. But it was also like, women just had a completely different role in society than doing theater like that.
So somebody was asking, who is your drag inspirations? It's probably Peaches Christ and Divine.
Peaches Christ.
RuPaul.
Yep. So Peaches Christ is really, I mean, RuPaul is honestly not very much. RuPaul, like, I grew up really obsessed with Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, Tu Wong Fu, The Birdcage. Supermodel was one of those things that I saw on TV. And honestly, like, it wasn't like when used record stores were around, it wasn't that easy to find a copy of Supermodel when I was in high school. Like, I remember running across
the
it
album?
Finally. Yeah. Yeah. I finally ran across it in the R&B section and was like, what is this doing over here? I guess she's black, so they put her in R&B because
it was Tommy Boy Records signed her. So they shopped it around.
But then it should have been in hip-hop.
Supermodel was released on RuPaul's birthday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. As a present.
92, right?
I believe so.
It was released in 92. It became a hit in 93, I think.
Okay. See, I went to Europe
quote, unquote,
in May 93, like May of 93. And so, like,
1993.
I think I missed it here in the States being a big hit. And so, and then I lived in Germany for a little while. And then one day I'm working in the kitchen with my friend Smitty. He was a 52-year-old dude. And he said, hey, come over here. And he pulls out a copy of the Stars and Stripes because I worked for the Department of Defense in a hotel.
Ooh.
Long story. And so he's like, hey, doesn't this look like our friend Dave? And it's a picture of RuPaul as a dude, right? And I was just like, yeah, that really looks like Dave. And then he moved his hand from the other side, and it was just like, it was RuPaul as a girl, supermodel to the world. And I was just like, holy cow.
That's so crazy.
I found out about RuPaul through the Stars and Stripes. I'm very patriotic that way.
I love it. RuPaul is one of those things that, like, she has been an important part of my work and things like that. But my interaction with her, honestly, the thing that I most knew her for when I was a teenager was, yeah, I knew she did Supermodel. I knew she was really famous for that. But I mostly knew her from Tu Wong Fu and her role in that, because I was, although I was much more obsessed with Priscilla, but I was obsessed with
Priscilla's
both.
Priscilla's a much better film. It's like leaps and bounds better.
There are things that are better about Tu Wong Fu. I like the fact that Tu Wong Fu included some of the real queens from New York, even if it is for 5.5 seconds.
Yeah, Australia should have definitely included the queens from New York.
It would have been really nice, considering how amazing the drag scene in Australia is and was at the time, to seen some of those queens from that scene at the time.
Sure.
From like, why not have one of the girls from the Lay Girls show? Like, Lay Girls was a real show.
Right.
That Bernadette was referencing. Why not have one Lay Girl in the movie? Like, why did we not?
It's a disservice. You're right.
Yeah, those
exactly
are the things that I'm.
And you know what that is? You know what it is that's called? And we call this nowadays. We have a term for that. It's called appropriation.
Yeah.
And so when people get mad about appropriation, this is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So please understand what appropriation is. It's stealing without giving credit.
Yeah.
Nobody says you can't honor something. Nobody says you can't, you know, celebrate something. But when you steal it and don't give it credit, that's appropriation.
Yeah. And that's.
So I'm sick of people on Facebook be like, I'm so sick of this cultural appropriation bullshit. I'm like, it's because you're an asshole is why you, or you're stupid and you don't understand.
Whoa, fighting words. Mark's no stranger to fighting with people on Facebook, especially drag queens.
Well, listen. I have nothing to say.
I lost my train of thought.
No, it's just like, well, what are those things? Oh, so we were talking about
Priscilla Green in the Desert
and racial tensions, you know, RuPaul's iconic
role. Yeah. And
people
so,
are still pissed about that. Like, so how let me, she wear a Confederate flag?
So let me explain that moment, because that is the movie, that is the movie and the director's fault for not explaining what the fuck that was about. Because the movie just was like, hey, here's a black queen and a blonde hair in a Confederate flag dress.
Called Rachel Tensions.
Called Rachel Tensions. Okay, but there's a real history behind that moment, that movie, the way it presents that, makes it seem like, oh, this is just a shock value whatever thing. That is not what that was about.
What is it about?
That was directly referencing RuPaul confronting face to face in high drag in a Confederate flag dress the Ku Klux Klan. Or sorry, Ku Klux Klan, whatever the fuck they're fucking called.
Wait, RuPaul did that?
Yes, in Atlanta.
What happened?
So she, I can't remember what she said, because it's been too long since I read her autobiography, but she was standing in front of the KKK when they were doing some kind of protest or demonstration or parade or whatever, and she was basically saying, like, why can't we all just get along in some variation? And she was, I believe she was wearing a Confederate flag mini dress, if I remember right. I might be wrong about that. But that, I've always thought that that was supposed to be a reference to that. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but I think it is the movie's fault for not making it clear in some way that, like, there's a context
to this.
There's
some weirdness. Some things got edited out. Fausto talked to Coco Prue about it, because Coco Prue seems like a lunatic fucking tick in the movie. You're like, why is she being so weird and stuff? There was a scene that was edited out, and she had a fucking gun. She was
just like, what?
She, Coco Prue is about to murder Patrick
I don't know
Swayze.
About this. Yeah. I'm like, so curious.
You watch the scene again, you're like, she has a gun. Mm-hmm. And she crushes a paper cup and drops it to the ground, and then nothing comes of it. And I've asked Coco Prue time and time, what was supposed to happen?
All I'd ever heard from her about that, although she's one of the only queens who told me she'd give me an interview, and then did not respond my emails, but...
Danny Freeman asks on Facebook, everything is being rebooted. If the movie was remade now, do you think it would be better or worse?
Priscilla or Chuang Fu?
Let's do both. So, I, you know, for me, Priscilla is like, it's a classic.
I would like to see Priscilla with Terrence Stamp's role done by a trans woman.
Yeah, sure.
I would like to see, like, two drag queens or two people who are at least gay play the roles of the other two queens. I mean, I could see a reboot of that being okay and being pretty cool.
And being, like, more trans inclusive.
I want to see Karen from Finance in that movie. I want to see Karen from Finance play, like, Tig. I could totally see that. I could totally see Karen playing Tig.
I absolutely adore it. You know, I asked her, like, on marriage. Like, Cher was just in Australia for the marriage equality, like, for Mardi Gras. And their prime minister took a picture with her. And he really stalled the whole gay marriage movement there.
Yeah.
So I was just like, please give me a comment. So I totally read her comment on it. She's so fucking delightful.
Girl, she about made me cry at Austin because, I'm obsessed with Priscilla. Like... Mm-hmm. Long story short, I don't want to make a thing of it. I don't want to get really emotional. I watched that movie over and over and over again with my best friend, Elizabeth. My best friend, Elizabeth, died when she was 19. Wow. Like, so I still feel her presence with me when I'm in drag. I wish she could have seen me become a drag queen, because all we ever did was watch these drag movies.
Sure.
And I was talking to Karen in Austin, and she was telling me about, I think it was right after their Pride Parade, if I remember correctly. She was sitting in the Chinese restaurant that is the same one that they filmed in Cooper Petey, I think, the scene where Terrence Stamp and Hugo Weaving are sitting there talking while the other character is doing a bunch of drugs and about to go get herself into a bunch of trouble with the coal miners.
Okay.
Right? And so Karen from Finance was talking to this other queen who was a queen who used to be a lay girls queen. And like, so she's the young drag queen,
pretty
drag
thing,
queen.
Yeah.
The other girl is the old lay girl, like Terrence Stamp was in that movie. And they were sitting, somebody came over to them. I can't remember if it must have been another queen. I can't remember. And told them, you realize you're sitting at the same table that those two were sitting at during that movie. And she was like, I was so overcome with emotion. And I was like, girl. Like, I bonded with her so hard in that moment because I was like, I can completely understand why that's emotional. Like,
that meant so much.
That means,
I remember my mother saying, like, like, why, what's the attraction to this movie? Why, and I hadn't even been out yet. Like, why have you rented this movie so many times?
I wasn't out either when I rented it like 100 times.
I think it's hysterical. Like, it's such a good film.
That movie is incredible. Like, we quoted it. I mean, like, that was like our, like, for a lot of girls now, we're like, you know, the like whole Mean Girls kind of vibe and stuff like that, you know, different movies they're quoting, but like that was what that was for me. So, for Priscilla was like our,
but now,
like, don't darling me darling, you've got a face like cat's ass. Like every moment was just us like that.
But what about Tu Wong Fu? Why to me it's like I like Tu Wong Fu, but I, in many ways I feel like it's a complete and utter failure as a film.
Yeah, so Tu Wong Fu, you can get a pretty good idea of where that movie is going by watching the original movie theatrical release trailer, because what you get is, first they're like, they show Patrick Swayze and they're like, he's been a heartthrob and a hero, and then they show Wesley Snipes and they say something similar about him, and then they literally don't even mention John Leguizamo, and then they're like, and now this, and they show them in that moment where they like just decorated their room by throwing all that stuff up, and it goes into this whole thing, but they show all these clips first of their action movies, so it was like literally that was how the movie was marketed, was about these action stars are going to be these femme women. Can you take it? Like, that was how the movie was done. And
you should be a DJ at a radio station.
I used to do that, but not in the right place. I used to be a local announcer for NPR.
Okay.
So I was
what?
Like, hello, this is WUOT 91.9 FM. This is Jeremiah Davenport. It was very much like that. So I used to host the morning concert.
You know, the thing about it is like, there's a real fetish out there for forced feminization. Now, for the longest time on our YouTube channel, our biggest video was forced feminization, where Fausto and my drag mother, Victoria Lamar,
rest in peace,
forced me into drag. And so like it got like a lot of views. And now finally, our episode of Cooking with Drag Queens with Kim Chi has surpassed that. But you never know. Like, there might be a new forced feminization.
So are you now in my
top
head?
Is Kim Chi the top queen from Cooking with Drag Queens?
Yes. Well, of our entire channel, without a doubt.
I feel like you just reached in my brain and grabbed something that I was planning on talking to you about.
What's that?
So, this forced feminization thing. So, in April, I'm going down to Dallas, for Leather Pride to host, hopefully, a panel of people. Or it might just be a class with me. We're trying to figure out if there's enough people that are interested in talking about it. A panel on drag and leather history for Leather Pride. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I'm wanting to talk about is this movie from the 60s called She-Man that used to be shown.
Yeah, I'm writing this down.
Yeah, you're going to live. She-Man. I literally just found out about this within the last 2 months, maybe 3 months. So there was a movie called She-Man, and before in like quote unquote art house theaters, so like a lot of like softcore porn theaters in the late 60s, early 70s, you would see these two movies back to back. One was called Queens at Heart, and it's recently been restored. And the other one was called She-Man. So She-Man was about forced feminization. It was a famous drag queen at the time named Dorian Wayne. And the character that she plays in the movie is this trans woman slash drag queen. I haven't seen the whole thing yet myself, but I've read all
the
stuff about it.
I'm watching the trailer now.
Right. So she forced feminizes.
She-Man, 1967.
Mm-hmm.
I was born.
And this is before Stonewall. Like this is before Stonewall. So this is
a story of She-Man, a story of fixation.
Yes. And it's basically she forced feminizes all of these people she's blackmailing. And she, like, makes them take estrogen. And she forces them to wear lingerie.
I love it.
And before that movie was shown...
I want to do this.
Oh, it's so good. And before that movie was shown was a movie called Queens at Heart. And I watched the whole movie of Queens at Heart. Because it's like, other than Christine Jorgensen's interviews, I think it's the only videos that we have, especially in color, of trans women Stonewall. And it's a bunch of trans women who are also drag queens who are interviewed by this guy who, over the course of the interview, seems more and more lascivious and like Like, it's very, you can see him like hiding his boner behind the desk.
High camp.
Well, it was, yeah, it was clearly for people who were like into trans people. They were transploitation films. Mm-hmm. That's what both of these were. They were transploitation films.
Oh, wow.
And so they were
I thought I had heard everyone. This is a new one.
I had never found this either.
Yeah.
This is brand new
research. From the vault. Anybody find it? Can anybody rent it?
They are both. Queens at Heart is on YouTube.
Queens of Heart?
At Heart.
At Heart.
Not to be confused with the more recent documentary, Queens at Heart, which is also about drag queens. There's Queens at Heart, and it used to be shown right before She-Man. And Queens at Heart was an interview with this guy, with these different drag queens who were also trans women, about what their lives were like. And then it ends with this moment where he's like, he leans at the camera, he's like, we know that homosexuality is a mental disorder, but what about girls like this girl over here that live their lives as women? Who are we to judge? 1967.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so it's this.
Was there something really funny about old
down the tide?
It's very, very strange. I had never seen it. I've been showing it to a few of my friends, and everybody's like, "What the fuck is this?" I'm mesmerized by Queens at Heart because the way that they adjust to the way he's asking questions is interesting too.
Have you ever seen CBS News 1967 documentary The Homosexuals?
Oh, no. Depressing.
It's fantastic. Mike Wallace from 60 Minutes hosted, and they're like, you are a homosexual.
I think he went on record later to say that it was something that he really regretted, the way that they portrayed it.
But now, to me, I'm really fascinated about this kind of old school journalism with LGBT people is comedy magic.
So let's be clear, though. Yeah. Neither of these movies would qualify as journalism. No. The guy who's interviewing them, the pretense is that it looks like journalism, but it's actually a guy who's just getting off on trans women.
And there's a movie called Making Love that has from Charlie's Angels, Kate Jackson, mm-hmm. and Harry Hamlin.
From the 80s.
Harry Hamlin.
The first gay mainstream film.
It was
really.
A first gay mainstream film. Harry Hamlin.
Gay Kiss, right? Or something.
A first gay kiss in movies, and she plays the wife
of a gay guy.
Of a journalist who's interviewing about homosexuality.
Ooh.
And guess what happens?
I'm so curious.
And he says it ruined
Scandalous.
He says it ruined his career. It was hard for him to find like a high like movie work again. I'm looking at this She-Man trailer, and like the beginning of the trailer is a story of fixation, and it's a woman basically showering, right?
Yeah.
And so like she's showering, and then next there's just like some dude sitting at a desk talking about something or other, and it's just like the weirdest kind of thing. Like it's a psychological
and then eventually
study.
You'll see Dorian Wayne, who is the queen, who's the woman in the shower, come out of the shower in that preview. Yeah, I was mesmerized when I found this Queens at Heart and She-Man thing, and I'm so obsessed because it's going to be the perfect thing to talk about in Dallas for this Leather Pride thing, because this forced feminization thing and the whole like BDSM element of that is like the perfect early reference to how these cultures have constantly been crisscrossing.
At the end, they have the She-Man, and it's the woman standing there and says, "This is Crystal. He submitted to protect his dad.
Yep.
They all live in a house of white slavery horror."
James Mansfield says, "Don't forget the Dinah West movie. I'm sorry, Dinah West, the movie Mae West tried to have buried because it promoted the rumor that she was born a man."
Oh, I love James. I don't
James
know
Mansfield
about this.
Is also a drag historian.
I know. That's why I'm obsessed.
And
that's
why I've been trying to get myself into his. He does a fantastic YouTube series about drag history.
Yep.
That you know, she says that is very like it's Feast of Fun the video series that like when we talk about culture and drag, and she does it such a good job with it, and I wanted like to I wanted to get you on the show, and I want to get on her show too.
We need to make that happen, Miss James Mansfield.
So James Mansfield, we're gonna do a road trip to Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
It's funny,
all dressed up and have a little party.
And so Raquel Welch insisted that like she was just like, I swear to God, Mae West during the filming of Myra Breckinridge, I swear she was a dude.
So here's the funny thing about Mae West. So Mae West, this is the loose leaf tea, as you will. Mae West may or may not have stolen a lot of her act from this drag queen who died in the late 20s, early 30s, I can't remember, named Bert Savoy. Mm-hmm. Bert Savoy has, like, there's recordings of her doing stuff. Like, she used to do this bit called "You Must Come Up." And people have conjectured that Mae West's "Why Don't You Come Up and See Me Sometime" is a direct ripoff of Bert Savoy's "You Must Come Up and See Me Sometime."
You must.
It was also that right around that same time that Mae West made the Broadway show Drag.
Oh, Drag.
And it was...
Have you read it?
I have not read it.
I haven't read it.
I don't know if it's any good. I just know that it was closed before it opened on opening night, and she was thrown in jail for it. Mm-hmm. And so it never came to fruition.
Was she thrown in jail twice for sex, too? She was thrown in jail for sex.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
I don't know enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but she loved her drag queens. Well, she grew up in the Bowery in New York City.
And
we know that the Bowery is filled with, you know, wherever there's sailors, there's men who dress like women.
Yep.
Or
it's
women
true.
Who were, you know.
Do you want some more piña colada, honey?
Yes,
you're
please.
All out of it.
Let me get you some.
So we got
amazing.
Some really
Thank
fabulous
you.
Questions from here. Boxes, it's so nice to have a kind of an informal conversation with you because you're such a treasure trove of LGBT history and culture.
Oh, pshaw.
And it's really great talking to you about this. So we have questions from our viewers on Facebook Live. And if you want to join in, we do this about now once a week on Sundays, facebook.com/feastoffun. You can make sure that you get all the posts and announcements that we do there.
Hi, everyone on Facebook.
Hey, everybody. So here's some questions here. Kevi Vida, you're doing a show with her here in
Yes.
Chicago. And she wants to know, is she being a good host for you? Isn't that sweet?
Well, you did put her up a displaying, so.
Yes, of course she's being good. Sorry, I misunderstood the question for a second. I was like, wait.
Is she nice to you?
Yes, of course. Of course. Say Kevi is like, we're having a blast talking about drag history, watching videos together. Like, we were watching Bozo videos this morning.
Coco Peru.
Girl, I'm living.
Hold on a second. Stop the presses. Coco Peru is watching the video right now.
Wait. Are you going to give me an interview finally, Coco? I emailed you 5 years ago.
You want to talk to Coco about what?
I wanted to talk about Coco, about where she came from. I know the cup story.
She came from her mother's vagina. Where do you think she came from?
But where the Coco Peru character and all of it came from. I want to know more. I love her.
Okay, so Coco, we'll set you guys up. Well, I'll do a Facebook interview.
Yes.
So,
thank you, Mark.
So we had a nice pina colada here.
You're
it's
welcome.
Quite lovely.
Delicious.
Schmigel.
Oh, that's May Attack from Cleveland. Hi, Maya.
You're my hometown sister. I will always remember when we went to see the film I Am Divine.
Girl, I fell right on my ass. I love you. You made me feel like I did not fall on my ass. Maya, I live for you. I always have.
Maya wants to know, what's your favorite John Waters film of all time?
Ooh, that's tough. No, it's not. Female Trouble. I love Female Trouble.
If I could
watch the scene where Don Davenport knocks over that Christmas tree, I could watch that 150 times over. And then the Who Wants to Die for Art moment is like one of my, like, the dog shit eating moment in Pink Flamingos is everything. That will never not be everything. But that Who Wants to Die for Art is like such a commentary on everything about what it means to be someone who is starving for fame and who will do anything to get it, and what it means to be famous, and so many other things. Like, that movie just, I could pick that movie apart forever.
It's John Waters' Mona Lisa.
It's
his greatest film ever.
I live.
And part of it is because it takes
place. And the injectable eyeliner.
It takes place at a really important moment in his career where he's doing all this really subversive, punk underground films like Pink Flamingos and Multiple Maniacs, and then he's reached some success and Divine's becoming a star, you know?
Yeah.
So he's able to get people in the community to show up to do that scene where he's like, Who Wants to Die for Art? Those are actually Divine's fans in the audience.
Oh, that's so cool.
You know,
I did not know that.
So those are the friends of the fans and stuff, and they just rented a little theater and they were like, let's have a pandemonium. And so when you watch that scene, it's fascinating how people are actually getting hurt when they're escaping that movie theater, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things I love about, like, I'm really looking forward to, hopefully, assuming that it's not sold out already and I haven't bought my tickets yet, going to see the Peaches Christ and Mink Soul. What
here
is the
in
name?
Chicago?
No, they're doing it in Pittsburgh. So I'm going to go to the Pittsburgh one because it's only like, it's not very far from Cleveland.
Yeah.
And I'm obsessed.
It's cheaper in Pittsburgh than it is in Chicago.
That's what I was wondering. But I'm really excited because I've heard some really great things about the stories that Mink has to tell about, like, wait, what's happening?
Don't touch the microphone.
Sorry.
It sounds like you're masturbating it.
No, it looks like a fantastic show. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited.
I'm so proud to present it. And if, you know, if people want to see it in Pittsburgh, definitely go see it. You don't want to miss it. And then Chicago, you know, there's very, very few tickets left. So if you want to see Peaches Christ talk to Mink Stoll about her illustrious career, with working with John Waters and with Peaches herself.
And, you know, and the stories that Mink has to tell, apparently, about, like, the fact that when they burnt that trailer down in Pink Flamingos, like, they really burned it down and she caught on fire and her Mink coat caught on fire.
They did so much drugs back then. I'm surprised she remembers anything at all. But you know what?
Right?
The human brain is resilient. Let's talk a little bit because we,
we're running out of time and we have tons of questions here. Come on. But go ahead and say what you want to say.
So what did you feel about this finale of RuPaul's Drag Race? Because, you know, we just talked to Vivacious about it, and she had some very strong opinions.
I thought it was bullshit. I love Trixie Mattel. I will always love Trixie Mattel. I love Trixie Mattel before Drag Race. I love her after Drag Race. I love
Shangela's
her when she's dead, whatever.
Win.
But it was Shangela's time. And above and beyond that, just the, regardless of the way it all broke down, the process itself was fucked from the get-go. And it was, to me, symptomatic of the changes that have happened in production since it's moved to VH1. Which is that it's become less a show for drag fans about drag and more a show for people who like reality TV competitions and love the generated drama that producers create by putting a seed into a problem that's already there and going, okay, let's blow this out of proportion.
But doesn't Trixie need the crown more than anybody else, Mark?
Yeah, that was the thing. I was like, it didn't really come to me until like later because all the queens were talking about how, you know, we really need to give this to somebody who really needs it the most. And in my mind, I was thinking, they're like, oh, they're nominating Kennedy because Kennedy, you know, she's at a disadvantage because, you know, we all see how African-American queens are being treated.
Yeah.
You know, they just don't get the same kind of fan base or the same kind of
respect. Well, especially black pageant queens, because like, look at the way that Alyssa gets treated versus every black pageant queen who's come from Drag Race.
Right. And so like, that's what I was thinking. They were like, it was a pity party for Kennedy. But then I was just like, oh, when Trixie won, it took a while for it to sink in. It was like, they're saying, we need to give this to the person right now who needs it the most. And when you look at all of the contestants of who really needs it at this point in their career the most, it's Trixie, because she's somebody who has a TV show. And if somebody who's got a TV show, if she can't be crowned the All-Stars, then nobody's gonna win. You know what I mean? And so when you crown one queen, you know, it's that sentiment that, like, a rising tide raises all ships. All of them get raised. And part of it is like, I'm glad Shangela didn't win. Not because I don't want her to win, but that's her story. And that's how we like her. You know, she's the chick that came out of a fucking box.
But see, all those things you just said are very much like how producers construct a show. So
exactly.
You know what I mean?
But it's also, you know what, this is Trixie's vehicle to launch her career. And she needs
it now. What do you mean, launch her career? She has a TV show. She has a number one folk album.
But what is that going to be, though, if she's not also crowned the star?
I don't think that star is going to make a damn bit of difference.
I don't think it's going to make her.
She won an award. She deserves that award.
I don't think she doesn't. It's not about whether or not she deserves the award. That's not what it's about for me. Like, I'm a huge Trixie fan. I think Trixie deserves anything she gets. And for me, it's not about Shangela losing either. It's not about Kennedy being the selected other person. It's not about any of that. It's about the fact that for 45 minutes, 30 to 45 minutes of that finale, we got queens in the past just come back and blah, blah, blah. And it's all producer created drama instead of what we could have had, which was a show where the whole hour and a half was devoted to showcasing drag queens doing what drag queens do. Yeah. I wanted to see why those four queens, why one of them was the clear winner because she slayed the shit out of the other three. That's what I wanted to see.
But you know what, though?
But then they'd be complaining that it's not a surprise. That it's predictable.
Yeah.
Like Bianca Del Del Rio or Bob the Drag Queen. They were slaying
all the
other queens.
But it was predictable to begin with. Trixie Mattel had the Funko Pop. We all knew who was going to win.
Well, that's not from the show.
But also, too, though, it is.
It might not be from the show, but it's a pretty strong indicator.
But that's a mistake from the marketing.
But it's also like very much an indicator of what your real life is like. And people wonder, like, why don't I go out as much as I used to? Because it's like, you know, I feel like I'm Trixie Mattel or Shangela sitting in the chair, and all these eliminated bitches are like, why do you have a show and I don't? And I'm like, well, because I started working on this in 2005 and you started doing drag because you were inspired by Sharon Needles. What can I say?
Oh!
Is that an aquarium? Dig?
Huh?
Is that an aquarium?
No, I don't even know aquarium. I'm just saying, like, there's queens.
Whatever happened just went right over my head.
There's queens that come for me and it was just like, they're like, you just started getting into drag because you watched a TV show. You know what I mean? It's like, I was down in the trenches with my drag mom, and she's just like, I'm pulling her out of her gutter because she's hung over and wasted and getting her ready for a show.
Are you talking about Victoria Lamar or Alaska?
Victoria Lamar.
So we got a lot of great questions here.
Okay. And then we got to wrap it up because I got shit
Carlotta,
to do. And I have to pee like a crazy person.
Graham Kerr, Carlotta should have had a walk-on in Priscilla. Who's Carlotta?
Carlotta?
I don't know. Danny Freeman, everything is being rebooted. If the movie was...
We did that already.
Okay, so Leroy Duwar, drag like dragons is super universal, even in conservative countries like Malaysia. Even so, do you think there's such a thing as drag which is culturally specific, like how American drag is distinctive than, say, from Thai drag?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that someone's referencing Drag Race Thailand because, frankly, all the bullshit about American Drag Race, I've been kind of able to bypass because I'm like, you know what? There's something amazing happening over with this Drag Race Thailand. Like,
somebody's closed captioning it.
Yeah, I'm obsessed. And not only they're closed captioning it, they're closed captioning it with the plays on words up here so that some things that are really, really important, like one of the queens in, I think it was the second episode, did this look for a love-themed challenge where she was a flamingo who was crying, and it was had something to do with the fact that there was a play on words with the word bird, I think, and a word in Thai for a person who is unlucky in love. So there are like whoever's doing those. I mean, I know who it is, but I can't think of their name right now. But the person who's doing those subtitles is really kicking ass because they're like they're going above and beyond, and I don't know if anyone is paying them. Excuse me, I don't know if anyone is paying them, but thank God for whoever that person is because I am obsessed with Drag Race Thailand. And yes, there is absolutely culturally specific drag everywhere you go. There is also culturally unspecific drag, which there's a lot of that in America. Stuff that's kind of not rooted in a particular thing, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean stuff that's not particularly like. It doesn't feel like American drag or like Thai drag or.
Kevin Vito once says, "Your hair is caught in your eyelashes." So,
thank you. Thank you, Kevin.
Taylor Jeffrey says that mannequin up there is trying way too hard.
Oh,
she is, and her nipples are way too hard.
She's very excited. Just sits there and demands respect and attention.
I don't demand nothing.
So that
except
is
money.
That mannequin up there is the artwork of an electrician from Beloit, Wisconsin, named Mike Dale Martin. He was fascinated with large-chested women, and over the course of 30 or 40 years after he retired from, I think he served in the Korean War, he started buying mannequins and building them with these giant boobs.
So he'd use Bondo, how you repair a car with Bondo.
Oh my God.
So those are Bondo boobies.
What?
Yeah. And so how did
this come to your possession? I'm so curious.
So we report, you know, on the podcast, we talk about, besides interviewing drag queens, we do a lot of stuff about artists. And we talk to all kinds of artists and we report on art. And there was this guy in Beloit, Wisconsin, who had about 70 mannequins with large tits that were up for auction. And he had just passed away, and his family didn't know what to do with them. And they posted these pictures on the internet, and they were so hilarious and so outrageous. Our audience then turned around and said, here's $400.
That's amazing.
We will give you this money if you bid on these these dolls. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, we're going to bid on it because we need the money. Because Feast of Fun is sponsored by you, the listeners.
Mm-hmm. Get your subscription at feastoffun.com/plus.
Yeah, let me hit this thing. Oh. And so we bid on it thinking we're not going to win, and we won.
I love it.
And so at the middle, on a Saturday morning at 7 a.m., I got in the car with Jesse, I think, and went to Beloit, Wisconsin, and picked up this mannequin, and in his house was all these other dolls, and his home was decorated to look like a bordello in New Orleans.
It was
Victorian, I'm obsessed.
It was a Victorian Gothic house.
Are there tours available?
It looked very Southern.
I'm very curious.
Well, the house is probably for sale now because he passed away and his wife is...
I'm sure the house got sold.
Yeah.
So anyways, the Mike Dale Martin's mannequins, he had like cranberry glass and old sconces. And
that's so cool.
Like a saloon in
like
his living room.
Like red velvet wallpaper.
Oh my
stuff.
God. Like, I'm obsessed.
So this home, and I was like, we got to know about this community. So I started knocking on the neighbor's doors, which the neighbors are not like next door. There's like home, cornfield. And I just started knocking on people and like, did you ever go to Mike Dale Martin's home for like parties or did you know? And they're just like, no.
Oh
so
my
he
God.
Just lived quietly with these mannequins for the last
That's so
30
crazy.
Years.
I don't know if he was just like, if he was into them sexually or if these were avatars for his own gender identity. I don't know.
I'm so curious.
Yeah. But I
want to know everything about her.
I was immediately attracted to her. Her name's Alita. But there was also another one I was kind of interested in. And she was a blonde. And she totally, he took a normal looking mannequin, made her into like a sex doll. Big giant boobs, like perpy lips and whatnot. He dressed her. These are the clothes.
I'm so
this is the wig. It's all
curious
his doing.
About all of this.
Taylor Jeffrey, Lady J, can you comment on the nature of drag and its relationship to mainstream culture? How has drag helped and hindered drag communities? I guess he's asking how has RuPaul's Drag Race hurt drag communities more? Because we obviously know the way it's helped.
I mean, obviously I think it's a little column A and a little column B, but yeah, how has it hurt? I mean, part of the problem is like when I first started doing drag, I remember I did a show at this place out in Youngstown, Ohio, and it was a bar where their business plan, which didn't work, they closed, was to basically book drag race queens every weekend. And then like I came in one week and I had on a 3 foot tall feather headdress that went down my back and I had these wings on that attached to my arms and I jumped down a 6 foot staircase in this. And landed like and spread my wings. I made $2. It was a really rough night because the people who came to that crowd, the people who came to that bar were specifically invested in drag race queens. And they literally, you could have farted gold coins and they wouldn't have given a shit who you are. They just collected the coins.
It's one of the most disappointing things to see is like when the drag race girls come to town, and I'm glad that they incorporate drag queens, like local drags, into the show. And a lot of them are really, really good about that because they know that like drag is about community and it's about, you know, making those kind of relationships because one day you're up, the next day you're down. But it's just like these girls are getting lots and lots of money and then people just throw more money at them. Meanwhile, this local girl's working for $35-$50, you know? And so that, you know.
Like
that,
this one here.
You know?
Yes, ma'am. You're not wrong.
You know? But in some part of it is like, you know, with drag in some places, when you go to different cities, is you do have to pay your dues and stuff. You
yeah,
know?
So. And it's so different from place to place. I mean, I think part of the thing is like, it's really hard to separate out how drag race has affected this culture because hookup app culture has affected it just as much, if not way more. Because
you're saying that like Grindr and Scruff has had a negative influence
enormously
on drag queens?
I was writing about that before grad school when it was online hookup apps.
Tell me more. I'm fascinated by that.
So I found this out sort of informally talking to a lot of queens when I first started doing research before grad school. So that was like 2007, 2008. And I was like, why do you think the audience are starting to dwindle down? And a lot of it was everybody unanimously seemed to say it's because once the chat room hookup culture came around, people didn't have to come to a drag show and learn about what's going on stage and fall in love with these queens while they're waiting for the dick. Like, that's how it used to happen for a lot of people was you're waiting for the dick, you're waiting for the person.
You used to have to go out.
Yeah, you needed to go out because you did, especially in smaller towns.
and I used to go out, and we would actually pick up a third sometimes.
Yeah, that's exactly how it was.
That's
like 20 years ago. Yeah.
Now it's like everybody meets through Grindr or whatever. So the only people you get at the bar are the people who are specifically there for a show, or people who are regulars, or people who are drunks. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like, that's a humongous part. And I think Drag Race, for all of its faults, does get way too much of the burden put on it alone.
Sure,
when it's really that Grinder, Scruff, hookup sites online.
We're a much more anxious society than we used to be. I think people
are
much more willing to go out and be in public spaces.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this gun violence.
Well, and used to, like, when I was coming of age, if I was bored, I couldn't be like, well, I'll just stream whatever I can't find on Netflix or Hulu or whatever.
I'll go sit in a goddamn coffee shop and listen to poetry.
Because I used to go to slam poetry nights because I would be like, what the fuck else is going on? I have nothing to do with right now. Like, there's nothing on TV. Now you can't say that. You can't just say there's nothing on TV because there's whatever you put on the TV is on the TV.
But you know what, though? People that go out are happier people.
Oh, yeah. And I'll be honest, every single show, anyone who ever come to one of my shows can verify this. Like, I end every single show I ever host the same way, by thanking the audience, by reminding them that in a world of Drag Race and YouTube and hookup apps and all of that, that those people come out and pay my bills. Mm-hmm. They pay those other drag queens' bills. They're the reason why we can afford those costumes. Mm-hmm. They're the reason why we're able to do that, because it's easy in this day and age to not be an audience member. Mm-hmm. It's easy to say, I can watch drag on YouTube. I do not need to go to the bar. It's easy to watch somebody's live Facebook video.
But it's just
or
not the
whatever.
Same experience. It's, like,
it's not.
It's like going out to live theater, and that's what drag is.
But we started going out when there wasn't all that. Like, that's the problem, is you and I do see that difference very starkly.
But it changes your life.
Yeah, but even still.
I remember seeing a show, I mean, seeing Lip Synca, or seeing Holly Hughes, or Tim Miller, or even seeing RuPaul, you know, back in the day, Martha Wash from the Weather Girls, in a gay bar. Was a life-changing experience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know,
it's hard to describe, right? It's like that energy.
You leave
that
the show. Let me give it to you right there. You leave the show and you say, I'm going to change the direction of my life. This is why this podcast exists, is because I, as a young gay boy, saw those shows. And I dedicated my life to talking about artists and art and culture. And in some ways, you know, it's like, you can thank us for getting RuPaul to do a podcast. You can thank us for giving a lot of early start to a lot of LGBT comedians and drag queens and people on the show. You know, I mean, you were saying something before we started talking about
especially that RuPaul interview. I mean, you guys were so important to me because, like, 9 years ago, when I started writing my dissertation, there were not many resources out there. I started seeking resources because I was frustrated with the gender theory that was out there. And I was like, why doesn't anybody talk about what's actually happening in the drag world? And I remember finding you all and being like, holy crap, there's like years of interviews with people. There's that RuPaul interview where it's the only interview I have ever found with her where the mask is truly down, because she wasn't famous anymore and she didn't know she was going to be famous again.
Real.
And she was real. And that is the only, I swear to
God,
that is the only interview she has ever given that has been real.
And you can listen to that in the archives.
Yeah, it's amazing. I highly recommend it.
Feastofun.com/plus, you become a member and you can access 15 years of podcasts.
14.
Well, now it's over 14.
It's 14. We're starting 14th year.
Oh, okay. So 14
Did
years.
Did you read the script?
I don't know what is going on. Feastofun.com/plus, and you can access 14 years of amazing podcasts, including several interviews with RuPaul and Coco Peru and
Holly Woodlawn. That's an incredible one. That one's incredible.
And you said it's one of the
That was really, really important to me. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, messaging you when I first found it, and I was like, I'm so glad that y'all did this, because
when we did those interviews, we didn't think they would be historical documents. We just wanted to talk to these people at a time when no one showed much interest in them. Mm. And this, you know, in the future someday we'd be like, wow, you interviewed Lady J. Martinez before she became this giant star.
Before she was on CBS Good Morning with like last week, and you're like,
we don't know what feature. You know, exactly. Think about Cameron Esposito. Mm-hmm. I mean, how big of a star she is now. You know, think of Sharon Needles.
Yeah.
Think about Peaches Christ.
Bianca Del Rio said here. Dora Delano has been in here. Peaches Christ has been here.
I mean, y'all have done so many interviews.
That dog has licked a lot of crotches, a lot of
jackpots. We do it all for the fans. I'm going to read a couple. I got a couple short letters from fans. I'm going to say one we got from this weekend was said, hey guys, this might be an overshare. I'm in a foreign city alone after having taken some really tough choices. I've been hanging solo, not sure how I feel, and not ready yet in the night to see people. I put on your podcast, and it's really made me feel better today. Thanks for the content. Sure. Okay. When I can, I'll definitely contribute to the podcast. And I was just like, oh, that is so sweet. And then, of course,
just go pee. Yeah, just go pee. She needs to pee, so we're going to film my pee.
Sashay away, girl. It's right there. Yeah. And then take a right at the first one. Yeah, and there you go.
She's peeing away. Okay, so keep going with the nice letters.
And then we got another one. Is somebody sent us $100 donations. I don't want to say his name because it's, you know, it's a fairly unusual name. So he knows who he is. I'll call him Lee.
Okay,
so Lee, he gave us a donation. And I wrote back because I always like to write back and say thank you for the donation. And if you gave a donation, I didn't write back to you, I may have missed it or something like that. I do apologize. If you see, look, this apartment or where we live, I got a lot going on. But he just wrote, and I just said, hey, thank you, so much for the donation. It means a lot to us. It, you know, especially when people share a passion for the things that we talk about and what we do. And he just wrote back and said, hey, I wanted to thank you for all that you do and know that you're a beacon of light in dark times. Thanks for all the great shows, guests, and your commitment to your art.
Honey, I've been a beacon of light. Let me put this camera on me. I've been a beacon of light in dark times since Bush, the first Bush, was in office. Mm-hmm. I was protesting him in ACT UP when I was 18 years old, and we will get through this too together, mm-hmm. honey. It's like, you see Trump? Mm-hmm. Those tweets that he puts on social media, those are the tweets of a scared man. A scared little man with little hands and a little heart and a little mind. And he is scared for his life.
And the weird thing is you know, we started podcasting during the second Bush, and then we got Obama, and things were great, and it was wonderful. And then, of course, we got Trump, and I thought, hey, you know, it's going to be terrible, but at least we can make some good jokes or something like that. Maybe people will support the podcast more because Trump is in office. But you know what?
They don't.
It was the exact opposite.
When Obama was in office, people supported the podcast more than they do when Trump is in office.
Trump has actually been really
sucking money and life out of us.
Terrible for our podcast. It's been terrible for our financial situation. We're trying to work out remedies. We're working out different solutions. I'll just say it. We're going to launch a Patreon soon because those subscriptions that we have, it's not enough to keep the podcast going.
But the cool thing about the Patreon is that we're going to make specific one-of-a-kind content for people in the Patreon channel. So the Feast of Fun Plus is going to be all our archives, and that's still going to be there.
That'll still be there.
And then we're just, you know, going to make the Patreon kind of like a Feast of Fun Lite. Mm. So it's going to be a way to access some of our premium content for people who may not be able to afford the membership.
And what I love about the subscription is, too, is when you subscribe, it's just not, you know, you're not just subscribing for yourself. You're subscribing for a lot of people that can't afford it. You know, we've had people that started listening to the podcast when they're 14 years old, 12 years old, 13 years old. Some of them are now like 26, 27. That's how long they've been listening to it. And some of them are paid subscribers, and some of them are supporting it. And they're saying, hey, listen, you helped me through high school. You taught me so much about what it is to be queer and to enjoy this and enjoy that. And you introduced me to so many different celebrities. And it's like, oh, I've gone out and seen this person, you know, their show 100 times, like 10 times, you know, and each ticket's $60. And it's like, it's great that you can support those artists, but support the people that introduced you to these artists too.
What about those other letters?
Those are the two that I was going to I only said I had two.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, you know, I have to say, like, for a lot of the listeners, I really do enjoy meeting you guys. Mm-hmm. And we
reach out to us.
Reach out to us. We are going to be at Peaches Christ and Mink Stole's event at Hamburger Mary's on April the 18th.
Bitch, I'm working the door.
You're working the door, Mark. You can go up to Mark and be like, I'll give you something if you let me in. But we can't actually let people in. You got to go to peacheschrist.com and get yourself a ticket so you can go see Peaches Christ and Mink Stole tell you all the tea about John Waters.
Very few and tickets left, so you want to get it today.
If you don't get them now, and pretty much like it's only VIP tickets.
Yeah, only VIP
tickets. The good thing about the VIP ticket is you get a chair, get to meet Peaches and Mink Stole, and they are forced to meet you, so they can't run away this time.
I'm going to ask you guys, it's okay if you like lightly touch them on the shoulder or something like this, but none of this.
No, yeah.
Don't do this. No, don't dig into things. Don't grab. They're human beings. I know they look like dolls, but treat them with respect.
Lady J. Martinez! Honey! She's taking shit. Listen,
she's got to untuck. That's
pinch
the problem,
it, girl! Right? Pinch it! Wait, she's we gotta end the show, honey. Come back.
Listen, you know what? You know what the big T is, though. You know what the big T is this weekend, though, that people are really freaking out on is like some guy has discovered a hack on Grindr where if you put in like you can sign into your Grindr, he's designed a website where you can put in your thing and you can see who has blocked you on Grindr.
Ooh,
I went because I blocked a lot of people and I don't want friends, them hating on me, so I changed my Grindr profile. Like I haven't accessed that in months. But I open it up and I put like a picture of a like skin, just, you know, like a patch of skin.
So people don't know it's you. I got rid of my face. As soon as that happened too, I was like, I better get rid of my face too. So it's just my chest.
Millions
now.
Of people. I feel like a Jedi, like Obi-Wan Kenobi when they exploded Alderaan. I feel as if, you know, a million Grindr profiles have been silenced.
But you know, how many people have blocked? Like, people are like, oh my God, I can't believe 200 people have blocked me. I'm like, I've been blocked by 560.
Oh my God.
But you know, for me, well, you know what it is though? It's like people really think I'm going to put them on blast. And they're like, that's not what I'm about. Like, people.
Oh, that's true.
They don't know. If people don't know you, they don't care about you. I'm not going to talk about people don't care about.
But 560, you know, I bet some of these people, some of the shadier queens have gotten a lot more blocks.
Probably. But also, like, a lot of these guys.
So you should be bragging about it.
I was kind of like looking at these guys, I was just like, why would you even block? I was like, looking at him like, you got nothing to worry from me. But you know, the nice thing about it is, it's like somebody once told us, man's rejection is God's protection. And that's
true.
It's like on that Grindr grid, that's valuable real estate. So it's like, of course I'm not going to have my friend on there. It's like,
okay,
you know?
True.
Lady J. Martinez. Where can we find out more about you?
You can find me at facebook.com/theonlyladyj, instagram.com/theonlyladyj, and theonlyladyj.com, all with just the letter J.
Tonight, which if you're listening to the podcast here in Chicago on Monday night, at the Call Bar.
Tuesday.
Tuesday night, there's a house of travesties called Hot.
Yes!
Sarah Kevi. Kevi Veed is a fantastic drag matinee that she's doing, and you're performing in it.
Yes, I will be performing with Say Kevi, and then if anyone's going to be in Dallas on April 6th or 16th, whatever the right weekend is for Leather Pride, I will be there doing, I'm now the official drag historian for the Austin International Drag Foundation, and I'll be there, thank you, I'll be there doing a panel on drag and leather history and their crossovers. So you should come and find out more about the movie She-Man. It's going to be amazing.
Thank you so much. And thanks to everybody for listening. And you can watch the repost on our Facebook page or our YouTube channel, youtube.com/feastoffun.
Woo! Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Bye everybody. Bye.